Hello everyone and welcome once again to another episode on the Muzi Wahid podcast. Alhamdulillah, we are now on the 8th and final episode of this ongoing series with Mendaki. And we are happy today to conclude with a brief summary of all the different topics that we have spoken about and engaged you with, so that hope you have an easy way to recap some of the key highlights of every discussion, inshallah. Okay, so as mentioned, this is a strategic collaboration between the Muzi Wahid podcast and Mendaki. Mendaki is, of course, a pioneer self-help group for the development of the Malay Muslim community in Singapore. It assists students and individuals of the Malay Muslim community with education and lifelong learning. For more information or assistance, please visit my.mendaki.org.sg. So, since today is the final episode of the Junior Learners series, we covered a couple of things about cognitive development. We spoke about time management. We spoke about teaching our children literacy and numeracy, and also a bit about burnout, you know. So with all of these different topics, let's get straight to it to give you a brief recap of every discussion we've had so far. So in episode one, we spoke about leisure learning through the holidays, specifically talking about the working memory. So the first thing we covered in this series was about working memory, where it governs our ability to retain and manipulate distinct pieces of information well. Working memory isn't just for the short-term use. It also helps the brain to organize all new information that comes into our lives for long-term storage and usage. When people have trouble with their working memory, the brain may actually mix up in all the information stored. The new, the old, they're all going to look the same, and you'll have trouble differentiating it. So how do we develop our children's ability to utilize their working memory for their benefit? One of the things we can do is to exercise the developing skills through activities and to foster creative play and social connections with friends and their classmates, for example. Teach them also how to cope with stress and involve them with all types of exercises that they can do indoors and outdoors. And over time, provide opportunities for directing their own actions, inshallah, with decreasing adult supervision. So, for example, one of the things you can try to do is to encourage your child to teach you on something that they recently learned in school or from their enrichment classes, right? So that it may help them to reinforce their understanding of those lessons. Another thing you can try to do is to play card games with them, because this encourages anticipation, which helps them also in their memory skill. Some of the games that I play with my kids include Uno, what is this thing called? Happy Family. And then there's this other one that we played, the donkey game, right? I can't remember what was it called. But we play this together as a family. We sit down and it's fun, you know. They can start playing such games as young as 4 years old. I think they can get it, they can understand it, and they can enjoy and learn from it too. Another thing to recommend all your kids to try to do is to jot down notes of whatever that they're listening into, and maybe it's a lesson, maybe it's a video that you're watching. Get them into the habit of writing things down. That, for me personally, even has been a lifesaver. You know, whenever I jot down notes during my years as a student, I tend to recall them a lot better. You know, whatever that I was reading, whatever that I was watching, whatever that I was listening to my lecturers or teachers saying, whenever I jot down notes, I tend to remember them better. So it enhances my working memory. So these strategies can help with the forming and retrieving of long-term memories. It also helps with the goal that we're talking about right now, which is to improve our ability to memorize things better, to retain them, and to recall them whenever we need them. So that was from episode number one. In episode two, we spoke about establishing a work-life balance for the family. It was our Father's Day special episode. And we looked into another aspect of mental skills, which is our cognitive or mental flexibility. So our cognitive flexibility is a skill which moves us away from limiting thought patterns to be open to other possibilities, which for me is great, as we know life can be challenging. We need to constantly be ready to evaluate and adjust to different tasks, roles, and responsibilities, to adapt to changes without feeling frustrated easily. So this is crucial for our children's development, as sometimes they need to know that things will not go as planned, and that's totally fine. This will encourage children to view problems from a different perspective and find solutions or alternatives to solve the problem on their own. It's so important that we empower our children to find answers, solutions on their own. Even though it's tempting, right, to always give them the answer, to always just help them and intervene and just say, never mind, let me do it. Let me handle it. Let me assist you with this. You can go on and play, you know. I think it's always good to train them, give them a chance and an opportunity to try to find a solution to the problem that's right in front of them, okay? So what are the other ways that we as parents can do to help our children's mental flexibility? Well, you can exercise with your child. You can learn to play an instrument or dance, cook a new recipe, or even pick up a new language together. When I say exercise, I'm not like, you know, saying that, oh, you do jumping jacks and push-ups and sit-ups. If that's too boring, play a sport with them. If they like basketball, if they like football, if they like netball, if they like badminton, whatever kind of sport that you play with them will also require them to think, okay? It's not just a physical exercise, it's also a mental exercise, which is going to be great. Another thing you can do is to initiate conversations that will get them to make quick decisions, make them feel confident and always open to having an engagement like that, a discussion of sorts, for people to exchange opinions freely, openly, without the fear of being embarrassed or being made to feel stupid, you know. Like, they are okay to share anything, they are okay to ask anything. So initiating conversations like that is really going to help your child in the long term. Create a visual schedule too, to organize their tasks into simple yet doable small tasks. In turn, this allows them to achieve success in small steps before reaching the ultimate end goal. So with these variety of exposures, it will enable your child to pick up new skills and solve complicated problems more effectively. And in the future, your child will benefit, inshallah, in being able to achieve their life's goals with ease. So that was episode number two. In episode three, we spoke about handling anxieties during primary one registration, a focus on emotional control. So right after we spoke about being mentally flexible, now we're going to talk about the emotions, right? And I know that we are always shaped, or not shaped, but dictated, right, by our mood. Every day we are affected by how we feel. If you wake up feeling amazing, your day is usually going to end up amazing. If you wake up feeling upset about something, you know that if you don't have strong emotional control, it will ruin and affect your day. So specifically, we're going to talk about the anxieties of a parent registering their child for primary one, which is a huge transition for the child, isn't it? Before this, it was just preschool. It was mostly fun and play, you know, eating and sleeping in school, you know. But now it's getting a lot more serious for them. And so parents get anxious because we don't know how our child is going to deal with it, how they're going to react, how are they going to cope with the sudden changes in environment and so on. So this is something that can affect our emotional control. Miss Nadira was my guest for that episode, and she mentioned that there are two aspects of the brain. One being the thinking brain, which is at the forefront, the frontal part, for processing skills of problem solving, of reasoning, and trying to figure things out. And the second being the emotional brain, where the emotions are situated. When the emotional brain is activated with high emotions of fear, anxiety, sadness, or feeling too happy even, it will mar the abilities of the thinking brain, affecting the soundness to problem solve or to figure out solutions. Emotions are transferable, meaning if you are anxious all of the time, your children will pick it up. Your anxieties will actually be channeled to all of them unintentionally. Even when you don't realize, even if you say, but I never intended that to happen, it still will. A jittery parent makes a jittery child. Yes, it can be difficult for us parents to send our children to a new environment. And definitely, it will be a challenge for our children going through such a new experience. Therefore, as parents, we should strive to give our utmost support and care for our children to go through school with an ease of mind. Do you remember when you entered primary one? I remembered it. It was a bit nerve-wracking, but a mixture of also excitement and anticipation of meeting new people, of being in a new classroom and having new teachers. So what you can do to help your child is to start by adjusting the routines that they have been used to setting new ones, right? And you can do this starting from the first week of December, a month ahead of time. One of the big things that I did with my kids was to adjust their sleep timing, making sure that they sleep early so that they can wake up early. So we literally woke them at the time when we want them to wake up every day in January onwards, right? They got used to it, okay? So children need to have a routine to adjust to the new expectations. Routines create predictability, and this in turn helps to manage our and their anxieties. And then work on relationship building with the school based on trust. You need to trust the teachers, trust that they will do what's right in the best interest of your child. It takes a while, you know, because you're handing your child over to somebody else. So it is going to take a few months maybe for you to really be okay with letting the teacher make the best decisions for your child. Trust is letting the teacher do and without any of our interference. Having open conversations about school with your child may help you to reduce this need to always want to know what's going on so that you don't constantly disturb the teachers and instead you just check in with your child. Only on rare occasions when you think you need to inquire further, that's when you can connect with the school and with the teacher. Go outside of, you know, how's school? How was your day? You know, go beyond those kind of questions. Be specific. You know, for example, you can say, who do you play with during recess? Which was your favorite period and why, right? So these kind of questions allow the child to think for a moment because it's not routine questions. It's unpredictable to a certain extent. It forces them to take a moment to pause and then to give you a thoughtful answer. In episode number 4, we spoke about safeguarding a child's well-being, a topic on self-monitoring. Self-monitoring is also known as self-regulation, how children regulate their emotions, which are acceptable in society's norms. For example, feeling angry, it's normal. I reiterate, the norm should not be suppressed. If you feel like you are mad at something, you're disappointed at someone, you need to express it But we need to guide our children in terms of how they express it, to do it properly and not to be out of control and allow their emotions to overpower them to the point where they do things and say things that are harmful to other people and to themselves. If we do not guide them, it will have a detrimental effect on our children. So once again, I said, you need to guide them not only on how to express, but to simply express, because if they keep everything to themselves, that can also be quite damaging. Okay, so the first step is to be aware of their emotions and the names in the languages used. For example, sadness can be upset, it can be sulking, merajuk, you know, like you need to know exactly what words to use to help them describe the emotions that they are feeling. With children, sometimes they get frustrated because they don't know how to describe what they're feeling. So you need to offer them some words, you know, teach them new vocabularies until they say yes, until they nod, you know. They might be crying as you're talking to them, but eventually they're going to tell you exactly what they're feeling. This advice could be something that you give your children, you know, you let them know, hey guys, you it's okay. You know, it's okay to feel what you want to feel, okay? But it's important that you control what you do as a result of how you feel, okay? So that could be something that we can remind them. But more importantly, when it comes to children, they are very observant. So it's really how you behave when you're upset that the children will learn from more. The rule of thumb is, for parents also, we should not be hiding our feelings too. It's okay to show emotion, because if you don't show emotion, you're always steady. I think the kids will also wonder if it's wrong to show and talk about their vulnerabilities. We need to be able to express it too. And the kids will learn that it's okay. We don't want our children to fake being okay when they're not okay. So we need to just be real and then explain to them exactly what we're going through. So as parents, we are responsible to regularly check in on our children, how their day was like, school was like, and then observe their use of words, especially after you've given them a few new vocabularies to use. Once they've opened up to you a little bit more, show more empathy and be respectful towards them. Don't make fun of them. Don't embarrass them after they've opened up to you. Okay? And I also believe that we need to spend quality time with our kids. It doesn't need to always be long. More importantly, it's about giving your full attention, being physically, mentally present in the moment in order to have a strong bonding experience. What you want to do is to help them feel safe and feel assured and to remind them that no matter what happens, we're always here to support them. So this provides a foundation for positive long-term effects on children, adults, and society as a whole, inshallah. All right, so now we're moving on to episode number 5. Episode 5 was finding balance in reaching your fullest potential. Here we spoke about task initiation and impulse control. So what we were looking into was what it would take to bring out our children's fullest potential while maintaining a healthy balance in their upbringing. How do we become more productive and more willing to get started on our tasks and all the more inculcate this habit in our homes where our children will mimic whatever that we do? This actually links back to another one of the exercises that we can do in terms of executive functioning skills regarding task initiation. It covers two main aspects: to take action in carrying out a task and having an idea of how to get the ball rolling. So why is task initiation important? Well, number one, to benefit the child by living towards a purposeful goal. How? Well, you want to empower them and encourage them to overcome the obstacles that they face. you want to guide them to get things done as how they had planned in the beginning. And by doing all of this, you're going to help your kids create their own future. Number two, children are taught to take initiative, and when they do, it will, in the long run, display better behavior. Example, a child that prepares lunch for themselves to eat in school, rather than waiting for their mom or their dad to prepare it for them the next morning, is a show of thoughtful and supportive behavior. So you should probably just suggest to them, you know, plant the idea in your head. What would you like to eat next week in school? What would you like to bring to school? Which snack? And they might say something like, I want a cheese sandwich, you know. And then you can tell them, oh, that means that we need to go to the supermarket and get some bread and some cheese. Do you want anything else to go with it? They might say, I want tuna, for example. And so it starts from there. You know, they are figuring out what they want to include in their meal. And then you ask them, do you know how to prepare this? It's very simple. Step one, step two, step three, done. You know, get a container, put it in, and then bring it to school. So when the child sees how you do it the first time, they will then want to take initiative on their own the next time around. You know, something like preparing a sandwich doesn't require too much adult supervision, and you can entrust them to handle it on their own. Another thing you can perhaps get your child to do is to say hello, to say hi to a new classmate. You know, when they do this, they are trying to make friends with someone new, someone they're unfamiliar with. This will actually increase their levels of self-esteem. It will also promote their ability to socialize better with others and making new friends. Okay, so that is not an easy thing to do, but it would be one of the most valuable skills they may acquire. Another one is a child who keeps his or her room clean or tidy up the bed on a regular basis is very important. I think I shared in the episode about my son who every time when we go to go on a holiday and we're at some hotel, when we're about to leave, when we're about to check out from the room, he will actually do his bed. And he will get annoyed when his siblings don't do their bit, so he will actually sometimes do it for them too. You know, everything tucked in, you know, the cushion, the bed sheets and the pillows and everything. Amazing, you know. So it's because we actually train him to do it at home, so he always does it at home. And so he just feels like, you know, I need to do it too when I'm here. So that's an example of encouraging your child to take their own initiative, okay? So in order to let our children reach their fullest attention, we as parents must have some impulse control. Instead of constantly pushing our children to excel, get straight A's, you know, what we want to do is to remind them of what's important, and we must also send them praises and compliments, you know, a combination of all of these things. And when a child takes initiative, and then you praise them, guess what? They're going to want to do it more. Okay? So remember to do that too as part of your parenting duties. I believe what's most important is for us to help our children identify their strengths and weaknesses through the activities and house chores that we do with them, thus allowing them to develop their own interests and skills at their own pace. Children are our assets that we must protect and nurture. It is our responsibility to be the providers, to be there for them, to support and encourage them, keeping them close to us with much understanding, inshallah. Our children are able to one day grasp the skills that we want them to acquire and the knowledge that we want them to have a lot better. So that was episode 5. In episode 6, we spoke about how to develop literacy and numeracy skills. This was a lot more detailed, and you may want to check out the full episode on your own later when you have some time. So in this episode, we spoke about entering primary school, where your child is now expected to know their numbers, to know their words, to be able to do some basic reading and addition and subtraction. Yeah. So this is, you know, there comes a time in your child's life when they going to start to learn to read and write on their own and do some basic math. And one day they're going to be officially tested, right, in school. Even though in primary 1 and primary 2 now, I believe there are no exams. I think in primary 3 also recently, no exams in the first semester. But it's something that would be really, really good, helpful for the child if we help them to be ready for when exams finally come. So one thing that we can try to do, parents, is to intervene early and then focus on helping them out with certain things, like identifying their strengths in their numbers or their words in reading, to identify what areas require additional improvement. When you do all of this, when you identify their strengths and weaknesses and the areas they need to improve, it will reduce significantly the performance gaps that your child may experience. Next is that we must have clear and transparent learning goals. So how do we list these goals? They must be intentional. They must be well articulated to the child. We must be well resourced in our planning. And we must work closely together with the teachers too. When we work together like this, our children will become more confident in their own abilities and to try out the work that the school will give them. Show them clearly what the learning expectations are. Show their current level of achievements and the state of their progress. And finally, inspire them to pursue higher levels of achievement. We don't want to force, we want to inspire them by showing them, look, even by studying this much only, you have achieved these kind of marks, right? Imagine if you put in a little bit more effort. Can you imagine the kind of results that you would get? Would you be happier with a better result? Ask them these questions and allow them themselves to say that, yes, I would love to have a better result and I believe that I can get better results. All I need to do is to study smart, you know, for example. So that was episode 6. And lastly, episode number 7 is adapting through changes. We emphasize that changes, they're always happening. You know, it never stops. Yeah. And I would, you know, inform parents to always take note of the kind of changes that you notice in your children, whether it's the way they speak, the way they socialize or don't socialize, the way they interact with their siblings, the things they talk about regarding school, regarding their friends, regarding their teachers, regarding their subjects. You're always going to notice something. Every half a year, there's probably going to be some unique, significant thing you notice about your child that's different with regards to their attitude towards school, towards learning. So please pay attention. All right. So that's all in terms of the summaries for all the episodes so far. Therefore, my dear listeners, one of society's most important responsibilities is to provide the support that children need to build these skills at home, in early care, and as well as in the time when they're about to enter primary school education. They need to experience structure, routine, habits, and have guidance regularly from their parents. Parents play a huge part in helping them enhance their skills from home. Our children, they are absolute gems that we should take care of. And it is our responsibility to make sure that they have the best life when they are young and at school and learning. Let them enjoy and fall in love with the idea of learning. Okay? So keeping them close to us with much of these understanding, inshallah, will enable our children to grasp what they need to know better. All right. So from there, skills that they have will better shape them, and they will then enjoy learning, they'll enjoy school life, and they'll always be open to sharing their progress, their happiness in school with you too. Okay, then that's all for now. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to our series with Mendaki. If you would like to learn more about what they do, please visit my.mendaki.org.sg. Thank you for supporting us, and I'll see you soon, and I'll talk to you soon in the next episode. Take care. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.